Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to episode 65 of Slam Fire Radio for July 10th, 2014. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor the Frelate.
And I'm another one, Owen Flewelling.
And Matthew is on assignment this week.
Wow, that makes it sound really official.
And by assignment, I mean we hate your guts, McClashy.
Yeah, pretty much. We're just mostly jealous, I think.
I was at a zoo today, and I saw his quarry, and I don't think he can do it.
No? You think they'll take him down?
I'm pretty sure. They actually may. Actually, they might pass him by. They may take Steve. They may take Steve instead.
They'll look at that and go, whoa, man. We'll save him for after, you know, when we're picking our teeth.
That's right. That's sick. That is sickly looking, and I'm not going to eat it. No, for those of you that don't know, Matthew and Steve Lee, who we also hate, are so far up north hunting wolves right now that at 11:30 at night the sun is still up. So that's how far north they are.
Yep.
It's going to be a once in a lifetime experience. I better be a once in a lifetime. And next time Steve goes, he better take you or me.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No, they're way up north in BC or Alberta or I don't care, shooting wolves.
Yeah.
They have to fly in on a float plane. Like, it's that kind of a hunt. It's a dream come true kind of hunt for these guys.
That's why they couldn't take us.
Because
there wasn't enough room on the plane.
That's what it was, yeah. Floats just ain't big enough for me.
I was going to say, they had to be, you know, you had to be under a certain height or under a certain weight.
So we're both screwed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where Matthew is. And I, like I said, I hope he doesn't get eaten by wolves. Severe dehydration or diarrhea, fine. But that's where I draw the line.
Yeah, mostly just because we don't want to have to, you know, try to find someone to replace him.
Yeah, we do need him back. He does serve a purpose, but we want him to suffer while he's there. So why don't we jump right into it now that we've thoroughly thrown both of them under the bus? And why don't you tell us what you did this week in guns?
Well, I think it is fitting that we threw him under the bus because this is the first show he's ever missed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So both you and I have missed shows, but this is the first one that he's ever missed. So.
And come to think of it, this is the first time you and I have ever recorded alone together.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's like
this show.
Yeah, this show. Well, we did your show, that's true. Yeah. But I kind of feel like our parent or guardian is away. And we've had too much sugar.
Yeah.
The walls are, there's going to be finger paintings on the walls by the time they get back. Yeah,
the cat will be missing.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that statue was broke when he left. I swear, Mom.
Yeah.
So, cool. All right. Yeah. So, what did you do?
Well, I didn't do a whole lot for reasons we're going to get into a little bit later. We had a bit of a tropical storm roll through, and so I was 4 days without electricity.
It's a little early, isn't it? In the season? I remember when hurricane season used to come in September and October.
Yeah.
This was just into July, and we're at Hurricane Arthur already.
So when you don't have any electricity, you're kind of surviving, and you don't really worry too much about having fun. So anyway, but when the power came back, did come back on. Anyway, Wednesday night, I went to the range, and there's a member of the club who's fairly new, not new to firearms, but new to pistols. And he'd taken, I think, his nephew to the range or something like that, and his nephew shot better than he did. So he decided that he needed to get some instruction. So he had sent a message to the club saying, hey, is there anybody, do we ever do courses, or are there any instructors in the area that would be interested in helping me out? So I sent him back a message and said, hey, I'm almost a black badge instructor.
But one more. But
been around pistols for a couple of years, so I mean, I help you out. So that was a few weeks ago, and just schedules didn't work out. But Wednesday night we met at the range, and yeah, I kind of gave him a real quick overview, beginner lesson on proper stance and grip and trigger control and everything. I don't think he listens. If he does, this is not a slight on him, but he was making every mistake in the book.
Oh yeah, self-taught kind of stuff.
Well, he actually admitted that I just kind of do what I see them doing on TV.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. There was, you know.
But there's probably more.
His arms were, you know, half bent. He was not high tang on the gun. His hand, his support hand was underneath his other hand. Yeah, it was. Yep. I mean, that's no slight on him. He doesn't know better.
Well, this is it. There's probably more shooters like him than there are like us.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I'm sure that's true. So, anyway, he was. So I just started out with that, getting him. You know, kind of just show me what you're doing now. I said, show me what you're doing now so that we can go from there. And immediately I was like, okay, stop.
I don't know.
Now watch what I'm doing.
Unload and show clear. Go buy an airsoft gun.
Yeah. So we started at our feet and worked our way up. And he immediately, he could tell a difference. You know, just as soon as I showed him isosceles, he's like, wow, that makes quite a difference. Just that all by itself, he was, you know, he could tell quite a difference.
Yeah.
So, and he is an experienced shooter because he has, you know, grown up around guns all his life, long guns and hunting. So, I mean, he can already just about call his shots. Like he said, I could tell when I fired that I, you know, was a little bit off right or left. He said I could tell. So, he's an experienced shooter, but the basics. I mean, his group went from like a. We put 10 yards, we put 5 rounds in, and it wasn't too bad after I'd kind of gone through this stuff. Then we went back to 10, and he shot, what did he do? There was still one thing he was doing wrong. I don't remember what it was now. Anyway, put 10 rounds, 5 or 10 rounds in the target, and then I showed him some stuff, and then he put another 10 rounds in another target, and his group went from, you know, like 6 or 8 inches to 2.
Nice.
It was really dramatic. So, I mean, it was an instant feedback, instant improvement. That was encouraging for him.
What was he shooting? Just out of curiosity.
Ruger SR9.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, man. I love the trigger on that gun. I think it's even better than Matthew's trigger.
Really?
It was really nice. I mean, and it's a new gun. It was a little bit gritty, but
I always hate it.
It has long reset. That's the only thing I don't like.
Yeah, it's definitely a duty trigger.
Yeah, but I found it was light, and there was no, you know, with the Glock, there's a lot of take up. Well, not a lot, but there's, you know, pretty standard take up. But then it gets really hard, and then you break the shot.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have that with the SR9. It's just,
no, it's more of a rolling break.
Yeah,
which helps you be more accurate. Really does.
I think it does for shooting. Now, as far as resetting the trigger, you don't have that. The same sort of feedback, but I guess you would just get used to it. Because I mean, right. When I shoot, I can fire the gun, come back out to reset, or even when I'm firing the gun the first time, I can take that slack up, and because it gets kind of hard before the shot, I can hold my finger right there, and I don't have to worry about the gun going off, and I know that all I have to do is pull it that extra little bit, and it's going to fire.
Yeah, the Glock definitely stacks up against that hard break, where the Ruger is a rolling break.
Yeah,
and some guys set up their 1911 triggers the same way. They have the disconnector and the sear worked on to make it roll. Like a lot of guys like that sharp glass rod break.
Yeah.
But if it's too sharp and too hard of a break, you're going to move your sights. That's all there is to it. I mean,
yeah, and I'm wondering if that's what's happening with me. And I'm wondering what I should really ask to borrow.
Tighten up.
SR9 and shoot it for a bit.
Tighten up your support hand.
Yeah, that's what I found I have to do.
Yeah, your support hand is what's going to control the gun and stop it from... Your support hand is going to stop you from affecting the sight or manipulating the sight by pulling the trigger, right? If you're not holding... That's why strong hand shooting or weak hand shooting, everybody who says... when people are shooting weak-handed, Some instructors will incorrectly tell the student to hold off to the left because when you pull the trigger, the recoil will push you into the middle. And that's not true. That's not what's happening. What's happening is they have such a horrible trigger pull on their with their weak hand that they're torquing the muzzle to the right. So that to compensate for it, they hold the gun to the left instead of pulling the trigger correctly. Well, now, when you've got the gun in your strong hand, what stops you from torquing the muzzle is your support hand. So the stronger you are and more effective you are with your support hand, the easier it is to be accurate and not affect the sights with a trigger pull. And if you've got a hard breaking trigger like a Glock, the more important that support hand becomes.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I agree. And when you think about long guns, it's kind of a similar thing. If you're right-handed, your left hand and arm is what aims and supports the firearm.
Yep.
Really, all the right hand done is
pull the trigger. That's it. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So, it's very similar that way.
Yeah. So
was good. Sorry, you were going to say something?
Oh no, I was just going to say, so drive that left hand in there and get it to do its job. They call it a support hand for a reason, right?
That's right. And I do tend to shoot to the left, and I think that's probably why, is I just get lazy with tightening it up.
Yeah, and same thing, especially in action shooting, because action shooting is not bullseye shooting, and when it's takes thousands of hours of repetition to always make sure that you're gripping that gun correctly every time you punch out to target. I mean, we find ourselves moving in and out of shooting positions and changing target arrays very quickly, and we're trying to get back onto the gun as fast as we can. And let's face it, we'd like to think that we get back on the gun perfectly every time, but we don't.
Nope.
And we may have everything lined up and end up shooting an Alpha Charlie instead of two Alpha because we haven't gotten onto the gun correctly.
Yep. And I kind of wonder if that's why I shoot better in competition than I do in practice.
Well, there's a lot less overthinking as well.
There's less overthinking, and in competition, your adrenaline's going, you're moving, you're more amped up, you're squeezing the gun tighter because you're, I don't know.
See, and I'm the opposite.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I come from a bullseye background with archery, right, where you're supposed to stand on the line and be in a calm, relaxed, zen-type state, and everything is precision, precision, precision. We're trying to hit a target that is slightly bigger than the diameter of the arrow we're shooting at the target, and we've got to hit it 60 times in a row. At the world level, to be competitive with the best in the world, you've got to shoot 600 or 600, in order to do that, you've got to be precise. So when I pick up a gun, and I notice this about my open gun, I'm having a hard time to just blaze the targets like the other open shooters do. I slow myself down to be more precise than I need to be. Open is really all about speed. I learned that in Hampton. I didn't think these guys were aiming. They're just running fast and spraying bullets. And I'm like, how is that? I guess it's fun, but it doesn't really lend itself to my way of, I want to hit a target the size of the bullet. That's how precise I want to be all the time. That comes from archery. So when I'm in practice session, I shoot much, much better in a practice session than I do in a match, because in the practice session, I fall back to my old archery ways of slow down and be as accurate and as precise as possible. Which, then in the match, you don't have time for that silliness.
No, that's right. And I think I do better because I do better under the action stress of it. Because that's my background, is on the fly.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Fluid, everything's changing. And in my background, the opponent was changing too.
Yeah, so you had to react on the fly.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, and then before he got there and after he got there, I had my AR and my plate carrier, and I just played around with it. I hadn't shot my AR in quite a while, well, at all this year.
Yeah, when you say AR, that's not fair anymore. You have to preface
which
your
AR?
Your PWD, your Beowulf, or PDWD, PDW.
PDW.
Yeah. Dyslexic much.
I was shooting my 14.5-inch
okay
barrel. Yeah. My battle rifle, I guess I should call it. I don't have a name for it. It's not named. I don't name my guns, I guess.
Your NEA will do.
Well, I have two NEAs, though.
Oh, okay.
One is NEA as well.
Your carbine. But battle's cool. I mean, you know.
What's that?
I said, a battle is cool if you want to call it your battle gun. And you want to roll some 12-sided die and get some experience points.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah, there it is.
That's an old joke. That one hasn't come out in a while.
Yeah.
I just practice reloads, basically, okay. To be honest.
Hey, but you know what? We don't do that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that just doesn't get done. So I just took my PMAGs and five shots.
As reload, a coach?
Five shots, reload.
As a coach, I would rather hear that you're going to the range and practicing something like reloads than, I went to the range and I fired 200 bullets as fast as I could.
Yep. You know, yep.
That's you not learning anything, right?
No, I did that towards the end. I just, as fast as I could, put the magazines in the gun and put the bullets into the target and blew through a bunch that way. I like to end off my practice sessions that way. I did that with my pistol too. Last mag of the pistol of the day was a full mag dump, just as fast as I could pull the trigger and still think I was, you know, on target. Like
that needs to be done. There's no question. Mag dumps, I mean, they need to happen. There's all there is to it, range therapy. Yeah. But I think a more effective technique is group in and group out. And that Matt Burkett talks about doing that. Of course, Pat Harrison over on the other show talks about doing that. First thing you should do to get your mind set up to reinforce the fundamentals is take a nice, slow, aimed fire, group shots, 20 meters, something that requires a lot of concentration, a lot of precision to nail down the fundamentals. Start your practice session that way, and then end your practice session that way, and you're coming in on fundamentals, you're going on fundamentals. Even the pros, the best shooters in the world, when they hit a rough spot in their game, that's what they fall back on. Fundamentals, fundamentals, because nothing else matters.
That's how I start out. I start out with very precise, like trying to get the best group I can at different ranges, and then I always try to finish with a mag dump. I don't know why I do that. I guess just because it's
fun.
Good way to end the night. And I did a little bit of shooting at 50 yards. We can only shoot out to 50 with our pistols at our range. And so I said, I'm going to try this. So I went up to 50 and I had 9 out of 10 on the paper. I think 4 of them were in the alpha. So
nice.
5 in the alpha. So I was okay with that. That was pretty good because I'm not really a long range shooter, especially with my pistol.
I got a real shock when I did that with my open gun.
Yeah.
I thought I had my open gun sighted in for 15, so I thought, and 15 is usually fine at all distances. And first time I tried my open gun at 50 was just before the Hamptons 250 match, the 18 stages in one day drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I was hitting so high at 50, and I was holding top 30 the alpha, figuring I'll start there instead of dead center. I thought dead center at 50 doesn't make any sense. I'm going to be all in the delta. Mm-hmm. No, I held top 30 the alpha, and I was going over top of the target. And what I was hitting way right. So, it's, you know, and a couple of things, right? Distance is always going to show a form flaw.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah, well, that's what I went over with this guy. I mean, when I kind of got him where he needed to be, I said, okay, you've got to remember everything that you've got here. I said, and I showed him a couple dry fire practice things and said, now when you're at home, you can practice this at home and build this muscle memory. I said, just make sure you're coming back. And he goes to the range once a week, every week, pretty faithfully. And I said, just make sure you come back and you're reinforcing that you are doing the fundamentals correctly by pushing your limits. You know, start at 5, you know, go to 10. Go work your way out until you start to see the breakdown in accuracy, and that's where your limit is. You need to start there and tighten down your fundamentals again. So,
yeah.
Anyway, gave him a little bit of dry fire practice drills and stuff that he can. You know, he's not drawing from a holster or anything. He's just shooting his gun.
Yeah.
So, but I can see him possibly. He was interested in the black badge that we want to hold here.
Yeah.
In Woodstock, and he was also interested in the Tommy shoot. Sure if he's going to be able to make it that on such short notice.
Right.
But he's one of these guys that loves to take do classes and things and learn and stuff like that.
Excellent.
So.
Cool.
So that was about it for me.
Awesome. Okay. I made it out to Trap again. Trap is every Sunday morning. McIntyre is in charge of that now. and not so good this time.
No?
No. I did walk
away. You had kind of got better last time.
I did, yeah. I did. I did not shoot my big whopping average of 10 this time. It was painful. I brought out my 870. Mark Giroux wanted to come out, and he didn't have a shot. He wanted to shoot trap, but he didn't have a shotgun, so he called the guy. He called his friend who he knows owns three. And okay. I was very happy that he did, because I wanted to get my 870 out, because I hadn't touched my 870 since I got the barrel back from Casey out at Tactical Ordnance in Ontario. I think it's Tactical Ordnance.
Who it was, but yes, you sent it away and it came back. And
yeah. He did my VersaMax, and yeah, well, it was a 28-inch barrel, cut down to about an inch in front of the magazine tube extension, and then refinished with a new bead and threaded for choke tubes. Of course, we didn't have a very good choke in it. I think it was improved or something like that. But when Mark shot it, he shot four. I shot a round with it, and I think I only shot three. So he beat me with my own gun. And when he shot my VersaMax, I think we both shot four. So it was a sad, sad day on the trap range. But I got the 870 out. I had a new follower in it. I got the single-point sling mount from Bank Switch Boutique, and the Magpul stock on there that I got from Jeffries. So I don't think I've had a gun come back or do something to a gun and it go that long without testing it. So anyway. Yeah, so it's all good. I mean, it's an 870. What can go wrong?
Yeah, well, that's right. Well, that's too bad. I'm really surprised. I mean, if you've been practicing and stuff, I'm really kind of scratching my head what you're struggling with.
I think it was the eye dominance thing again. Because I'm left eye dominant and I shoot both eyes open, I often see the side of my barrel as opposed to seeing down the rib.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if you're tired, it's certainly more difficult to try and really force the focus onto your strong eye, which is, you're never going to change the dominance. But if you kind of, you get the gun up at the high ready and you kind of shift, you know, squint your left eye a little bit until the right eye picks up the bead and then say, pull.
Yep.
It's usually not too bad. The other thing we were doing, though, is we were shooting number eight. Number eight's like throwing sand in the air or salt. But I bought a case of it anyway because he wanted to get rid of it because he wants to get in some more 7.5. And so I was like, yeah, I'll take a case. I walked away with a flat for $60. So I'll just use that for plinking at the range, practicing with my VersaMax. SummerSlam, of course, ongoing. We took possession of the range on Sunday. And with the exception of the 22 activities that happened on Wednesday night and on Saturday, we have our annual 22 shoot. The range is closed to all other activities so that we can do construction. Okay. So I've been on the range every day with a couple other guys. And thank God, like Salsh and Chris, before Salsh left to go out west, they were starting work on the range every day at 6 a.m. And they got about 50% of it done before he even went out there. So we're putting the final touches on the stages. Several of the stages are ready for targets. That's it.
Okay.
And a couple of the stages, like the Kandahar Drive stage, that's the one with the two-dimensional car silhouettes. Those are the props that we're using. You probably remember those from previous SummerSlam.
Remember those from Nationals.
Yeah. So Harold has all. We pretty much ruined one and the three-gun shoot. They put a steel plate on behind the car.
Oh.
To stop shoot-throughs on the targets, because we had flippers, right?
Hmm.
So anyway, the steel plate should have been in front of the car because the whole corner is destroyed, right?
Oh, yeah.
So Harold's rebuilding those. We have this complicated slider where you open a door and you've got a series of no-shoot targets and shoot targets. And you remember the first three-gun, it was up on the first three-gun or second three-gun? No, second three-gun. It was up on the hill and you had to pull a cord. And it exposed the targets from behind the no-shoot targets.
Yes. Yep.
Well, that's now going to be put on a motor. And when you open the door, it's going to activate the motor, and it's going to be like a reciprocating saw, right? It's going to go to the left, and then back to the right, and back and forth, and back. Well, that's the plan, but it hasn't even been constructed yet, and we're less than 7 days away. I'm freaking out. So, and then I'm getting daily emails are really starting to pour in. Where is this being held? Where do I pick up my registration? Who am I squatted with? Can I change squads? Can I change divisions? I'm going to change my email. That's what I'm going to do. So, but whatever. No, it's going to be good. It's going to be good. And then I loaded up some ammo for my open gun. I got out and I did a little bit of practice because I put a new firing pin in it and new recoil spring. So I put a Matt McLaren extended firing pin in the gun, same one as what George McCullough lent me at the Southern New Brunswick 250, and no problem. I don't know why I was getting weak primer strikes with standard length factory firing pins and regular springs, but I was, but with this McLaren one, and they're fitted. They're not fitted, sorry. They're extended, and you're supposed to fit them. It says right on there, like, this will need to be fitted to your gun. So I'm like, well, I'll put it in the gun, and I'll put just a couple of rounds in the mag, and if I start to get some silly things happening, then I'll know it's too long. Well, first of all, I visually inspected it, and it wasn't protruding through the flash hole or anything, but not the flash hole, but the hole in the breech face, right, where the firing pin comes out. Yep. And it wasn't, but you could see it. So anyway, I took it out, and the gun ran fine, so I didn't have to fit it. I just left it in there, and it worked fine. Some dry fire practice besides that. And then I went and sighted in Mark's Ruse Glock 17. He ordered some, or he bought from another New Brunswicker a set of sights. I think they were Dave Savigny sights, maybe, okay. Or Warren sights. And they were real nice Glock sights. But the front post is so high that when you, and the rear sight is adjustable, and you can adjust it all the way, it doesn't matter. It still hits 8 inches high at 15 meters.
Wow.
Yeah, brutal. So we took those off and we went back to a Glock. Do you still have that adjustable rear sight, or did I get that?
I do. No, okay. I'm pretty sure I have it. I intended to bring it up with me and I forgot.
Okay, I need to get that at the when you come up for the Tommy course.
Okay.
Because that's what I got to put on his gun. What I did do, though, was a lot of people like a rear sight that's completely blacked out. Mm-hmm. And so he's got a red fiber optic high vis sight on it. And I took the factory Glock sight and I flipped it 180 degrees so that white U shape is now gone. And he's got red on black, which is what he would have had with this Dave Savigny setup. So I did that for him, sighted that in at 15. Wednesday night, every Wednesday night, we have a 22 kids program in our club. This is amazing, Owen. Like 25 plus kids show up every Wednesday. It's insane. We're awesome. Flooded. Yeah, I mean, it truly is awesome. And then, of course, we're picking up some parents as well, right? McIntyre's running it. He's got one group of kids down on the 22 bay, and then he's got a group of kids with scopes. So you got some kids shooting iron sights at 25 meters, and the kids with the scopes are shooting the silhouettes at 100 meters.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're hitting them. In the last 2 weeks, it was insane windy, like really bad wind, especially bad wind for a 22 long rifle. And the kids are, we laid on the target stands and we put some 4x4s across them and put up the rams and the chickens and the rams, the whole thing, the rams, turkeys, pigs, chickens, and they're hitting them. They're doing it off the bench, but they're still hitting them.
Nice.
I had one little girl come out. She's cross-eyed dominant really bad. Like, she's contorted like the elephant man trying to look through the scope. And she was crouched behind the shooting bench without a chair, trying to look through. And I walked over. I said, whoa, whoa, whoa. What is going on here? Well, they let me shoot like this last time. I wasn't here last time. I don't mean to sound like an a-hole, but you're not shooting that way. We're not going to fight about it either.
Yeah.
And, she got right, you know, well, I can't. And this kid, her mother was going to put up her targets for her. After a while, she did it for a little while, and then she's like, Mom, will you go put up my targets? And Mom walked the 100 meters and back to put the silhouettes back up for her. Yeah, that wouldn't have been me.
No.
I said, I tell you what, here's what this means. If you're too tired to walk down and pick up your and put up your own targets, you're probably too tired to shoot. Maybe you should stop. Mom and Dad were like, yeah, nobody talks to her like that. I know.
Yeah. Maybe you should start.
Exactly. Anyway, so, but the big fight, she didn't want to shoot from a chair. She tried standing up. And so when she was standing up, she actually achieved the proper body alignment and cheek weld and stuff. I'm like, all right, now just take what you're doing now and put it into the chair. And then in the end, we actually had her, using her right eye, closing her left eye, and her accuracy increased. She went from hitting one or two to three or four out of five at 100 meters. So she left happy. That's all that matters. We got her doing it right, and she left happy. So
good.
And then finally, the NFA journal arrived, and I'm quite happy about this particular issue because the article I wrote about the Moncton tragedy is published in this issue.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I saw on the NFA's Facebook page, special thanks to Dr. Kylan Langman and Trevor Furlott. And I thought, yeah, that'd be the day I see my name next to his name. So, and then thank you, Pierre-Luc, for pointing out that there's a typo in the spelling of Constable Fabius's name. That was good. I'm glad you got something out of the article. That's what I said to him. And he said, no, I didn't read it yet. I just saw that. I'm like, yeah, all right. He's that guy, right?
Yeah.
Your tie's crooked. He's that guy. So, anyway. And I mean, geez, the article starts on page 16. 16, 17, 18, mm-hmm. 19.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I didn't think you were such a wordy person.
Well, you know, I am.
I mean, it's not like you go on and on and on about anything ever.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. I was going to say, well, you know, I am university edumacated, right?
Yeah,
I just try not to let it out there. So
see, I wasn't. See, I was just home teached.
Well, they teach to good. You're right, smart you is. So, all right. So yeah. So the NFA Journal, check it out, and I'd love to hear what you think about the article. So far,
especially if it's bad. If you have negative comments and hated it, make sure you send your emails to Trevor.
So far, it's 50-50. The NFA Facebook page has had two people come out and not attack me, but just say, no, this is not what we need. And I've been going back and forth with one of the gentlemen on there, and I will call him a gentleman because he's being very respectful. He's not attacking, but he's just, you know, he's articulating his points very well. I won't say he's a FUD, but he just doesn't share my point of view.
Yeah.
So he's a FUD. And no, he's not a FUD.
I thought it was good. I mean, you kind of gave me. I mean, I don't know what you changed after you showed it to me, but you had showed it to me before you'd sent it to them to get published, and I thought it was good. I mean, again, a lot of people aren't there yet.
Yeah.
So, and that's one thing with anything you read like that, you have to remember, not everybody's there.
No, I know, and I mean, I wasn't there.
Yeah.
I went from being the host on Canadian Reload Radio that said, I don't feel the need to have to carry a gun. I've never seen myself be in a situation that I couldn't get out of. But maybe the situation where I need a gun hasn't happened to me yet. And if and when it does, I'd rather have one and not need it than need it and not have one.
Mm-hmm. You went from not ever seeing a need to carry a gun to going to flying across the continent to a Mag 4.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, yeah. No, and I mean, it's, and you have to do both sides of something before you can pick a side.
Yep.
You know, that's always been my take on things, right? Like, all the way back to university, I went into university an agnostic, and I used to get into debates with, you know, people all the time about religion and its purpose. And I thought, well, if I'm going to argue against something, I need to learn more about the other side. So I started taking religious. I ended up graduating with a minor in religious studies, and it was an eye opener because now this wasn't Bible studies, this wasn't catechism, this was studying the religions of the world and what each doctrine teaches and what each religion believes, right from Muslims to Hindus to Jews to Christians. Mm-hmm. And I went in there hoping that I would come out being able to better argue against organized religion and rediscovered my faith in the process. So you never know. You know, so I went to Mag 40 and came back going, I need a gun. I can't go nowhere without a gun.
And I'd be allowed to carry it.
That's right. So anyway, yeah. No, but you're right. Not everybody is there. Americans carry guns and blood does not run in the streets. So why can't we?
Yeah, and there's some been very interesting statistics. If people have been following some of Langman's stuff, some very interesting statistics that have come out recently about the increase in carry, number of people carrying, and the decrease in some crime.
Exactly. More guns equals less crime. Yep. I mean, why don't the police get attacked? Well, they did in this case, but no, he didn't go to the police station and kick the door down.
No.
He did a cowardly thing and ambushed them, but, you know, generally, the police department doesn't get attacked because they have the guns and they're allowed to carry them. Yeah. And so, and this, there's a notion out there that police get out of the academy or the RCMP get out of depot and they somehow have this magical ability to be better at situational awareness, better at marksmanship, and it's just not true. It's just not true. They're still human beings. They still make mistakes. Yes, they've received training, but the training that they've received doesn't give them superpowers. And this notion that we have to bow down and put our trust in them is asinine. There's no reason why I can't be as effective as a police officer.
Well, they receive training on a lot of things, and they have their primary responsibilities and the things they do day to day are not firing a weapon.
You got
it. They carry it, and they have to know how to use it, but you know, they receive more training on law and how to deal with different situations in other ways than
how to lay charges
actually using their firearm.
That's right, and it's not. But see, and it's not just about the firearm. When to use the firearm.
Yep.
You know. Yes. I mean, you can be taught that, and I can be taught that. You and I are reasonably intelligent, normal people, and I think that. We're just as capable as a police officer. Now, that being said, we're not police trained, nor do we claim to be.
Nope.
But it doesn't take a Harvard-educated Navy SEAL to become a cop.
No. That's right.
So.
That's right. Yep.
Let's move on that happy note.
Yes.
Upcoming events. I'm skipping over the flyer, and that's all there is to it.
Sure.
Versamax draw. There are still tickets available, and the draw date is in 10 days. Mm-hmm. And I have so many freaking tickets left, it's depressing. We're taking a loss on the gun. That's all there is to it. Really. We're losing money, unless I can sell a whack load of tickets Friday night and Saturday night, because we're not drawing the ticket on Saturday at the banquet like I thought we were. The date on the ticket actually says the 20th, which means we will draw the ticket for the shotgun after the awards are given on the range at SummerSlam.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So Saturday, July 20th, that's 10 days from today, kids. Yeah. Somebody is going to steal a gun from me. Please. Buy a ticket or three, or recently somebody bought $60 worth of tickets through an EMT. I'm very grateful. Wow. The tickets are three for 20 or 10 bucks each. You can get them by sending an EMT to restigushgunclub@gmail.com. Please send a follow-up email with your EMT password, name, telephone number, and address. Practical Armed Response Academy shooting course will be put on by Tommy Dawson of the Gun Dudes. Tommy Nelson.
Wait a minute, did we just combine Peter and Tommy?
We did. They had a special hug, and they had a child, and they named it Tommy Dawson. All right, so Tom Nelson of the Gun Dudes and Meg Forty Instructor will be teaching this course on August 2nd and 3rd. There are two spots still available. The cost for the class is $200. If you do pay and need to cancel, you have until the 1st of July in order to receive a refund.
Which is pass.
So no refund for you.
That's right.
Gots to buy a plane ticket for Tom. So... it's going to be a good time because not only are we going to do the shooting course on Saturday, we're going to have a little mini match next day. So,
I'm there for that, but I'm really looking forward to the course part.
I wish I could take it, but apparently I'm going to be a safety officer.
Anyway. Oh, I'm sure you'll get to shoot some of it.
I'm going to do my best to make sure I do, and I'm still going to be following along, and I'm going to see if he has any objections to a video camera running in the background and videotaping the whole thing for our personal use later on.
Good idea.
Multi-Gun, August 16th, 17th. $40 pre-registration is required because I want to work out the squads and whatnot ahead of time and score sheets and all that good stuff. The registration form is on the Rescuish Gun Club website. And please note, we have a major match sponsor. Not the NFA, unfortunately, like SummerSlam, but Press Check Ventures, which is good enough in my books, are sponsoring this event. So, and by sponsoring, it means if you register, you get a free mag. Right, Owen?
We'll talk about that after the show, Trevor.
Okay. I'm not holding my breath. We've got another great... This has been a busy, busy year. We had the charity event. We had the charity event. Well, there was... I mean, I've been on the range. There was the Balmoral Festival. And then the charity event. And now there's a 22 shoot on Saturday. Then SummerSlam. Then the Tommy course. Then the multi-gun. And then in October... just in time for hunting season, Thunderbird Tactical Carbine Clinic with Master Instructor Daniel Shaw. October 11th, there's only two spots left. Also $200. You've got until the 1st of September to cancel. If you have a rifle, and it doesn't need to be an AR-15 necessarily, but some kind of semi-automatic magazine-fed platform, and would like to learn to run it better, this is the class for you. So if you're interested, please let us know. What else we got here? These are upcoming...
I've thrown in a couple here.
You go ahead.
One. This one came from Jason Philp. And we love Jason Philp on this show. But this attachment that he sent, apparently the shooting starts at 10 a.m. on July 19th and 20th.
What kind of shooting?
That's a good question.
Where's it going to be held?
Wherever Mosley is.
Okay.
there was an attachment on the email, and when I opened it, it was a blank Word document.
So if you have any questions about the Mosley shoot on July 19th and 20th, hold on, I'll get you Jason's telephone number. You can call him at...
Exactly.
I don't know. What are you doing, Jason? Get it together. You want us to promote your stuff? Give it. I mean, come on, get it together. Move on, Owen. What's the next one?
Well, this next one wasn't actually sent to the show, but through Press Check Ventures, I became aware of it. In Fort St. John, B.C., they are the North Peace Rod and Gun Club are having a three-gun match on July 19th. So that's coming right up next Saturday. Not this coming Saturday, this following Saturday. So I just thought I would throw that in there. We are sponsors. Press Check Ventures are our sponsors of the... a sponsor of the shoot, and
nice.
So I just thought I'd kind of throw that out there for anybody that's in that area that's interested in doing some three gun in their IDPA league. Check that out. If you go on the North Peace Rod and Gun Club website, just type that into Google and it's on their calendar, and there's probably email there. You can contact somebody if you need more information.
And I'm just throwing this out there, it's not too late to sponsor SummerSlam.
Okay.
News?
Yes.
All right. So a couple of weeks ago, or last week actually, we brought you a story out of Winnipeg that we talked quite a bit about, and it involved a shooting that occurred in the wee hours of Canada Day, after midnight, in the hour of the drunken beaver in Canada. On Canada Day, it's not the wolf, it's the drunken castor.
Okay.
So... anyway, this is the one where we went back and forth about... Well, the story goes that he had a loaded 9mm handgun in his hand, and a female companion grabbed his arm, and he shot her in the upper body, and she died from her injuries. And he claimed that it was an accident, called the RCMP. They charged him with unsafe storage and all that usual stuff. Well, there's a part two to the story. Murder charges laid in fatal Canada Day shooting. Winnipeg police have upgraded charges against a man accused in a fatal shooting on Canada Day. On July 1st, police found the body of 28-year-old Michelle Stobe near Donald Street and Broadway. Stobe had been shot in the upper body, according to police. Police said they believed 35-year-old John Elwood Cameron was handling a 9mm handgun that was registered to him when Stobe grabbed at his arm and the gun went off. Guns don't go off. Cameron was then charged with numerous weapons offenses. After further investigation, the homicide unit has now charged Cameron with second-degree murder, Winnipeg police said they no longer believe Staub had a part in the gun going off. Officers believe Staub and Cameron may have had a relationship prior to the incident. Cameron remains in a provincial remand center. So they had a relationship prior to the incident. Well, I mean, I always assumed from the news story that these two people knew each other. Obviously, they were in the same dwelling in the wee hours of the morning on Canada Day. They weren't perfect strangers, but whatever that relationship was, it really doesn't matter.
It wasn't a good one anyway.
But yeah, it did not end well for Ms. Staub.
Yeah.
And nothing good happens in the hour of the drunken beaver. So, anyway, at first we approached this from this was a horrible tragedy of perhaps playing with guns, playing with loaded guns when they shouldn't have been, and not handling guns safely, and an accident occurring as a result. But now it looks like he may have just plumb straight up shot her.
Yeah.
So,
anyway. Yeah, it would be kind of interesting to see the evidence and why they changed their... You know, what led them to believe that, you know, because, I mean, there wasn't another side of the story that we know of. I mean, if she's dead, there's nobody saying, no, I didn't grab his arm. He just shot me. You know, there's only one side of the story, so they must have had some pretty compelling evidence to upgrade these charges to full-on murder.
Mm-hmm.
So.
I wonder, maybe once they had him in the interrogation chair.
That's true. Yeah, maybe. They might have found some gaps in his story, and I picture, you know, CSI with lasers and sticks, you know, trying to figure out the trajectory of bullets and stuff like that.
But exactly. It's quite possible.
Yep.
So, yep. All right, cool. Let's jump into listener...
The main topic.
Yes, let's do the main topic. Listener feedback. I don't know. The magic of radio will make it happen somehow. So our main topic this week is Owen's power went out.
Okay.
So we decided that we would talk about, a little bit of prepping, because especially since it hit home this week. There are New Brunswickers still out of power after Tropical Storm Arthur ripped through very early in the week. And it's crazy, Owen. Like, I leave my property... And I go less than a block away, and there's destruction. There's big trees ripped down from people's lawns onto their neighbor's property. In the town of Dalhousie, there are shingles off of roofs. There's one big spruce tree at the outside edge of the park in downtown Dalhousie. And when the wind blew it over, the roots were underneath the sidewalk, and it ripped up the sidewalk.
Wow.
Yeah, there's some... Even we were over driving on the Quebec side today. We took a drive towards the Gaspésie coast. We went as far as Bonaventure, and there was tree damage over there, and people are still cleaning up their property.
Wow.
Apparently, I was in a bubble. I'm under a dome.
It is weird, because I saw that around here, too. Little, like, areas that don't... They're just normal, and other areas look like they've really been hit hard. And we had trees on our property. Like, I had one small little tree... I mean, it was tiny, that was on the side of my driveway, and I was just letting it grow up. It was like one of these Manitoba maple type things, and it blew over. And I mean, all the winter storms we have, and I didn't even feel like we had a lot of really high winds here, but my house, just where my house sits and around the trees, we don't feel the wind because we're protected by the trees, and that's why I built it there.
Exactly.
But... It must have been pretty gusty out in other parts. Yeah. There's people in Woodstock, they're saying Tuesday before they're going to have power.
Wow.
And there's still people in the town limits. There's like two streets that don't have power for some reason.
Wow. Parts of Fredericton still out.
Yep.
As of yesterday, the CFO's office was still closed.
Oh.
So on my property, not a twig out of place. Like, that's crazy. But I stood in my kitchen. And I called Christina over, and I said, look at this. I said, the wind is literally pushing the barbecue across the deck. So that's how strong the wind was, but still not a twig out of place on my property. With that being said, we're going to talk about different levels of preparedness. We have, on one end of the spectrum, friends of ours who came over to borrow flashlights, because they don't even own a flashlight and had to borrow ours.
Wow.
Me kind of in the middle. I've got some stuff in order, but I've got a long ways to go. And then you, that is more prepared than most people. Fair enough?
Sure. Yeah, I've got a long ways to go too, but probably, yeah, the average person more prepared, yes.
Yeah, you're more prepared than I am, and I'm more prepared than the average person. So, but you still found in your situation that you were lacking stuff.
Yeah, there was some things. Now,
well, let's go back to the other end.
Okay.
Our friends came over to borrow flashlights. I gave them some flashlights. And while I was looking for the flashlights, that was the first warning sign for me. I don't have my flashlights readily available. I need to go dig for them. That's not good. When I was growing up, my parents kept a flashlight in the stairwell so that if they needed to get down to the basement when the power was out, they didn't have to look for it. It was hanging there on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
I should have learned that lesson, right? I had to... The first flashlight that I found was my mag light with no batteries in it. I have a crank flashlight somewhere. Could not find it. I had to go to my hunting kit, which is the closest thing I have to a bug out bag right now. And it had my good flashlight in that. I gave them that one. And then Christina gave them one out of her nightstand. I have one on my nightstand, and she has one on her nightstand. Those I didn't want to give up. She gave up hers, and then I gave up the one out of my hunting bag. And then I was thinking after the fact, well, it's a good thing that I still have the one on my nightstand, because here I am giving away flashlights. What if our power goes out? Now we're going to be down a couple of flashlights. So not only did they not have flashlights, they came over to use the washroom. Because they didn't know that you could flush a toilet when the power was out.
Now, you're on town water, are you not?
Yes, and so are they.
So you shouldn't have been out of water.
We weren't out of water. What I said was they didn't know that you could flush the toilet when the power was off.
Oh, sorry. I missed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking because there would be a lack of water.
No. See, that's how little knowledge they have of the workings of the things around them.
Wow.
They came over to use our toilet. And yeah.
I'm in that situation where if the power's out, I can't flush a toilet.
Well, this is it. And when I was
doesn't run.
Right. And when I was in Beldoon, same thing. If you're on a septic tank and a well, it's a little bit different for you. See, they were going now. I'm not throwing them under the bus. They don't, you know. It all depends on how you're raised and what you know and what's taught to you. But in their defense, they have a toilet in the basement that is lower than ground level. And they have a pump that pumps the sewage up and out of the house. Mm-hmm. So that pump they knew worked on electricity, so they assumed that because that toilet wouldn't work, the upstairs toilet wouldn't work either.
Right.
So I explained the whole idea of, well, you're on municipal water, and as long as there's pressure in the water line coming from the city, you're good to go.
Yep.
So they were like, oh, well, now I feel kind of silly. I'm like, well, you didn't know how to tie your shoes until you were taught either, so it's just the way the world works, right?
True.
So we got that end of the spectrum. Can I flush my toilet when the power's out? To me, that, you know, I have some stuff, but I don't have a generator. I'm ashamed to admit this. I don't have backup water. As soon as we heard that power was out in our region, Christina went to fill the tub, just because why not, right?
Yep.
But food, okay, food. A little to no means to prepare the food. I mean, camping stoves. We would back up to the camping stove and the barbecue.
Yep.
That would get you through a little while, but I would lose everything in the freezer. Now, Mark is farther ahead than I am. Mark has a generator, and after this scare, he's making the call to get his panel wired to his generator.
Okay.
So he's taking it. He's got one step, and now he's going to the next logical step: run the generator, run the panel off the generator.
Yep, that's what I did.
I don't have a generator, but I know where there are two. My dad has them, and if there was any prolonged power outage, I would probably just go scoop him up, bring him here, and then bring his generator along too, so he could stay with us because he lives by himself now. So, but. And the cars weren't full of gas, you know. When this stuff happens, you should fill up your cars. The next day, in Dalhousie, where there was no power, the gas stations were all closed. Mm-hmm. The gas station out near the gun club, you were waiting for like 10 minutes to get to the pump.
Yeah, we say that a lot. There was one or two gas stations in this area that had generators to run their pumps and their debit and things like that.
And they got ran dry.
Oh, just, yeah, very, very shortly. Yep. Yeah. No, there was, I mean, and it's, we lost cell service. A lot of people lost phone service.
Yeah, they lost cell service in Dalhousie.
Yep. And because what would happen, because so many people were out of power and out of phone and out of internet, they didn't have their computers, they were using internet on their phone. As soon as they were powering up the towers, once they had power, the towers had power, they were crashing because so many people were on.
More than the grid could handle, yeah.
More than what it could handle. So they what they were doing for a while is they were not powering them up in the morning in the middle of the day when people were kind of at work and going, they would power them up. And then, you know, they would go down again and be back up again, and then just kind of up and down until enough people kind of got back with power that the grid could handle, you know, regular traffic. But
just speaking about the grid, but not the cell phone grid, our power grid. Mm-hmm. Now, MB Power is pretty good,
yep.
But I was told that back in the 70s, there were little to no power outages, and if they were, they did not last for days. And that is because, apparently, now this is just one guy's opinion, mm-hmm. our infrastructure here in the province is getting very dated.
Yes.
And is not keeping up with demand like it did back in the 70s.
I can see that. Because you also have to remember you've got a bit of a movement. You've got a bit of an urban sprawl happening in a lot of places too. So you have what used to be rural communities, and you've got subdivisions, people coming out of the city, wanting to be close to the city, but they're out of the city.
Yeah.
And so now you've got areas that were rural that have infrastructures that haven't been updated to handle, you know, extra load, more houses, things like that. So
that's
part of it.
New Maryland, outside of Fredericton, is a classic example of that. It's country life with the access to the city in Fredericton.
Yep.
And places that used to be, even 15 years ago, that were fields, yes. are now high-end subdivisions.
Exactly.
Yep. All working off the main line going through Maryland. That's been there since the 50s.
Yep. Yep, yep. Exactly. So, yeah, I had a generator. But I'm going to talk about something kind of interesting, I think, because I actually had two generators.
Yeah, you had one died, didn't you?
Yeah, I go by the rule that two is one and one is none.
Yep.
That's one rule. The second rule is always have three things to get what you need. Three ways to get what you need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Three sources of water, three sources of food, three sources of power, three sources of everything. Three guns. You know.
Exactly. That's why I have three shotguns.
Right. Yep, three lead delivery devices. So I had two generators. I had a small one that my business used to use, and it was still at my shop. I didn't even have it in my house, actually. I didn't even know if it worked. And I had my generator, my welder generator, which I thought was big enough, which turns out it isn't big enough to run my pump like I thought.
How many watts?
So I had to learn 3,300.
Really? And that didn't do it?
Well, here's the thing with generators, and this is important. People who are going to shop for a generator, your pump, depending on the situation, but a pump will draw somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,000 watts per side, so per 120. So you're looking at maybe 2,000 watts to run for a 240-volt pump. The startup on electrical devices, electrical appliances, is 300%.
Wow.
So if you need 2,000 to run it, you need 6,000 just to start the pump. So, and that goes for everything. That goes for refrigerators and freezers and anything. There's a significant startup spike in the voltage. So you have to make sure you have it. Because I could have ran it. If I could have got that pump started, it would have ran,
mm-hmm.
and pumped. But it wouldn't get it started, get it over that hump. Mm-hmm. So that was something I learned actually during this. So I'll be looking for a bigger generator.
Mm.
Now what happened, of course, about 3 days in, my generator died. All of a sudden, just boom, out of the blue. Just still ran. The motor ran. Everything seemed to check out fine.
No current.
Didn't produce any power. So fortunately, enough people were back in power by that point. I was able, a friend of mine, his father had a generator they weren't using, and I was able to borrow that for the last day, and then the power came back on, so we were good. But it was kind of touch and go there for a while on where, because I mean, everything in town immediately sold out. I mean, and the power went out as soon as the stores were opening again. People were just scarfing them up all over the place. Anything they could get their hands on. And my other generator, I had loaned to my father, so he was using my second generator as, you know, to keep his freezers cold and things like that. Because that's mostly what we were concerned with, was keeping, you know, the food. If you're like us and you have a lot of food in your freezers and fridges, and we have two deep freezes and two refrigerators. And we consolidated one, you know, we didn't have much in one of the deep freezes. We consolidated that over into the bigger one.
I'll be fair, I have two refrigerators too, but one of them is just for beer.
Yeah, that's mostly what I keep in my second refrigerator.
Okay, all right. Oh, Canada.
Yeah. But yeah, we used it for extra milk or whatever, and the top part is just to have, you know, just more freezer space, because the freezer is in the barn to deep freeze, and so it's a long ways to go in the wintertime to get stuff, so you can bring over a bunch of stuff at a time. So that was, I mean, of course, in the middle of summer and it's 25 degrees, that's a big concern, is, man, I don't want to lose, you know, basically a winter supply of meat, or half a winter supply of meat that we have there, you know, and have it go bad. So,
like your bear, for example, you don't want to,
I didn't.
Oh, squirrel, did you get your moose license?
Nope.
Man, I don't know anybody who got it yet. Well, actually, I do know one guy.
Okay, you know Random Dave?
Yep.
Random New Brunswick Dave?
Yep.
His wife puts in for the first time this year and gets it.
Stop.
Yep.
Man.
Oh.
And I don't miss a year. I can't tell you the last time I did not apply for a moose license.
I know.
And then, like, my cousin, Carly, her father, I can't tell you the last time he didn't get it.
Yeah. It's strange, eh? 2 years ago, this lady's father got it. It just seems to run in families or something. I don't know.
And at McIntyre, 7 of them in the group, nobody got it.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so that's, you know, the whole generator thing was great, because we were, you know, I wired it up to the panel, shut your main breaker off, wired it into my dryer plug or dryer breaker, and I was able to, you know, turn all the main breakers off, turn off the main breaker coming in from the street, because you don't want to backfeed into the system. And then I was able to just switch on the panel, switch on the breakers to run the things I wanted, you know, which wasn't a lot. I can't run a lot, but I was able to run my fridge and my freezer alternating.
Hold on a second.
Yeah.
You turn the main breaker off so you're not putting current out of the house.
That's right.
You only turn on the breakers to the appliances you want to use.
That's right.
But you did what through the dryer?
I took my pan, because I don't have an actual plug set up. So you have to feed into the panel somehow.
Yeah, and you did it through the dryer breaker, through the
dryer breaker. So I took my panel cover off. I unwired my dryer breaker.
Right.
And I put my wire that going to my panel.
Yeah.
Okay. I made a plug that plugs into the generator, and I wire the other end of the plug into the dryer breaker.
Ooh.
So that it has, because a dryer breaker is about 40 amps.
Mm-hmm.
So that way I was able to get my neutral and my two 120s wired into that breaker. And then I could turn that on and off to control it like a main breaker.
Now, I mean, I had a father who was a licensed electrician, and I took electrical shop, and I made marks in the 90s, but that was a long time ago. I don't think I'd be trying that. You need to have a fairly good understanding of your home electrical system and electricity in general, and circuits before you start messing with your panel.
I would agree. If you're not confident about it, don't do it.
Don't do it.
Have an electrician do it ahead of time. I didn't have it done ahead of time, and so it was that or not really have any use for my generator.
But I mean, you're a licensed...
And I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, you work in this kind of stuff day in and day out. This is what you do, so it's a lot easier for you to do it than me, the pencil-pushing teacher, right?
Exactly. So, you know, I was comfortable with that, and I did actually call my electrician and just run it by him and say, what's the best way? Well, how would you do this?
Good
and
idea.
He's like, yeah, I would do it this way. And I was like, okay, that's what I thought. So anyway, so that's what I did. So that it worked well, because I was able to, I had my battery
my single battery bank. So I had that pulled out and up on the kitchen counter so we could run, we could charge, you know, phones and things like that. And then I could charge it. I just had my smart charger plugged into one of the counter plugs, and as you know, as it needed to be charged, I could flip that breaker on to charge to power up those plugs and charge my battery back up. And of course, I run mostly CFLs and LED lights in my house. So one night we were late coming home from my parents, all the lights were off, pitch black, no power, kids are freaking out. Start up the generator, boom, boom, two breakers, the whole upstairs is lit up, you know. Get the kids all in bed, you know, get their teeth brushed and blah, 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 and settle them down and then shut those breakers back off, right? So we didn't run our lights all the time. Most of the time we did without it, but I could power it up when I needed to.
Mm. And that's, well, I mean, that's what you do, right? That's what's important.
That's right.
Don't run it for the sake of running it. I mean...
Nope. And I didn't run my generator 24/7. I just ran it for 2 or 3 hours till everything was cooled down. Then I shut it off for four or five hours or whatever. I'd, you know, check the freezer not too often. Don't be constantly open the door, close the door, open the door. You know, is it thawed yet?
Yeah. Just, well, you know. And that's my, and again, I'm not throwing my buddy under the bus, but he came over and he's like, yeah, I read on the internet to keep your freezer closed. Don't be checking it all the time because every time you open it, you let cold out.
Yeah.
Yep. Sure do.
I want to go a little squirrel here. I want to talk to the people out there, and I'm sure I'm going to get hate mail from this.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't get it very often, do I?
Well, we know you're sensitive, so we don't pass it along.
The people out there who think that because a package of steak has started to thaw, it cannot be refrozen. And therefore, it must be thrown out because it is or eaten immediately. I'm sorry. I believe that's a myth. I don't think there's anything wrong. I mean, if it's completely thawed, room temperature, sitting out in the sun, yeah, okay, maybe you don't want to eat it.
Refreezing...
The quality is definitely going to be less by refreezing.
But that's all it is.
That's all it is.
There's it's just nothing. A quality.
Yep. I heard so many people, we've got a freezer full of food. If you have power and you want this food or you want it, they were giving away like freezers full of food to anybody who was could eat it immediately.
I'm in.
Because they were terrified that this partially thawed. It wasn't even completely, it was just starting to thaw. It wasn't safe to eat.
That's because we're the grocery store generation.
Yeah.
We're so detached from where our food come from. And how it is processed, that's why these myths exist. They don't understand. Like, you slaughter a beef and let it hang in the barn for 3 days before, yeah, you know, getting it cut up.
Yeah, exactly. Best beef I've ever eaten was hung in a you know, just in a cool shed for 3 weeks.
Yep.
It was almost starting to rot.
That's exactly what it was doing. And that's how beef gets tender. It starts to decompose.
Exactly. So that was just kind of one of my little pet peeves from this last storm was all the food that probably was still good that was wasted. Anyway, do we go on to other things I learned?
Absolutely. That's what we're doing.
More propane.
Oh, yeah?
You're going to cook everything on your barbecue. And we did. And let me tell you, my wife, I mean, you know she can cook.
Yeah, do I?
She can make everything taste as good as you've ever tasted. On the barbecue.
Well, everything tastes better on the barbecue by default, so.
Well, that's true. But she was making, like, scones.
Oh, my God.
Cooking it on a barbecue, and you thought that they just came out of a bakery.
Nice.
Yeah, it was impressive. So we cooked things on the barbecue I didn't know could be cooked on a barbecue. So,
awesome.
Probably some of the best goose I've ever eaten in my life that we had this past, well, the power was out.
Well.
Oh, stuffed. So we took the goose breast, stuffed it with peppers and cheese and onions, and then wrapped it all in bacon, and then wrapped it all in tin foil, and slow cooked it on the barbecue. Oh.
But really, what could possibly be better than breast wrapped in bacon? I don't. If there's something better than breast wrapped in bacon, I don't want to know about it.
I can't fight you on that one, man. So yeah. You're going to use propane. Propane doesn't go bad ever. you can buy and stockpile propane. And I usually keep a couple bottles, and it just happened I got caught with two half-empty bottles.
Even the propane that you would use for your little propane torch, I mean, you can run a camp stove on that. It's
exactly
the same. Propane is propane.
Well, I went in because my dad was using, he found that heated water better than the barbecue. Probably smaller surface area.
Oh, yeah. No, you can't boil a pot on a barbecue.
That's right. So he found his little camp stove, the pot covered it, and it would boil water pretty good. But he only had one of these little propane tanks. So I was going to town. This was on Monday. Woodstock was kind of back up and running somewhat. I said, well, he said, will you get me some more of these? And I said, okay. So I went into Canadian Tire. I mean, the camping section would have been stripped bare.
Yeah, exactly, right? That's where you go because you're camping all of a sudden.
Yeah. People were buying those Coleman lanterns just for the propane bottles in them.
Wow.
Yeah. So I went, okay. Yeah, Walmart still wasn't open, so I went over to the small hunting store we have in town, and they had a shelf full of them because nobody thinks to go there.
Nice.
So I was able to pick up a bunch of those for him. And I went into the – I figured the propane is going to be gone. And I went into the into Kent where I usually exchange my tanks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, do you have any propane left? And they kind of looked at me like, why wouldn't we? I went, oh, okay. I want these two exchanged and I'll buy another one. So I was ready for that for – you know, we had enough propane probably to do a couple weeks there.
It's a good idea to keep an eye out every time you're in Walmart or Canadian Tire in the off season.
That's
walk
right.
through the camping section and just start stockpiling that stuff.
Yep.
Because if the power's out, guess what, folks? You're camping. Because that's the difference between a motel and camping. Power.
Yep. And what was the other things? I had lots of fuel because I'd already been prepared for that. I'd bought and stabilized a lot of fuel ahead of time, not just in anticipation. I just had it there. I'd had it probably for 4, 5, 6 months.
Yeah, we talked once about, or you did on one of your shows, maybe yep. one of your last episodes of The Warrior's Ethos, about how to rotate your gas and store your gas and number your cans.
So I had that kind of done, and so I had plenty of gas to last me for several weeks. So that was good, you know, for a generator. But like I say, I mean, this wasn't a really widespread. It wasn't long term everywhere,
right?
And so I could have got gas easy enough, you know, two days later.
Yeah, same as Mark, right? Mark drove halfway to the range to get gas.
Yep.
Right, but I mean, you raise a good point about the gas. What's the point of having a generator if you don't keep gas on hand?
Exactly.
And because when the power is out for you, it might be out for the gas station.
Yep. If it is a widespread, like say this is, you know, you could find gas if you really needed to, but if let's say this was a full week where nothing had power for a full week, like Hurricane Sandy, you know, where you had whole sections of cities that didn't have power for weeks and weeks.
Yeah, New York was a mess because of that one. I think it was.
That's right.
Right.
I mean, they couldn't get gas long term. You've got to make sure you have it. So I'm thinking if I get another generator, I'm going to go diesel.
Really? Biodiesel?
Maybe. But definitely diesel, and for a couple reasons. One, my tractor takes diesel.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get the diesel, and I can rotate that diesel simply by using it in my tractor.
Yep, buying fresh stuff and putting the old stuff in the tractor, yeah.
Diesel doesn't go bad like gasoline does.
Oh,
gasoline
better.
Goes bad, you know, they say six months. If you stabilize it, you can get a year to 2 years, depending on your stabilizer.
Yeah, and that was my other point. If you have the generator, you need the gas. If you have the gas, you need to stabilize it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I like this diesel idea.
But diesel doesn't, and so you can get, you know, an oil tank, just as if you were buying fuel oil, and fill it, and there it is.
Wow.
So that's kind of what I'm considering. Again, I live in the country, and I'm a little bit better able to do some of this stuff, but... that's what I'm considering if I do end up getting a bigger generator that'll run my pump.
You know,
I mean, we had my pump now as it was. I mean, we saw the storm and we knew we lost power. Like, out come the water barrels, and we had 45-gallon drums set on the valleys of my house, and we collected, you know, over 100 gallons of water. Just
and you didn't go to jail. You heard about this, right?
Oh
yeah. In some states, it's now illegal to collect rainwater. And people are getting arrested and charged if they're caught collecting rainwater.
What?
Yes, look it up. I'm not making this up. You can't make that up.
Nuts. No, you can't. That's crazy.
It's beyond.
Like we had 7 inches of rain.
Wow.
I've got areas of my ground that have never been wet in the summer ever, and they're laying with water. We had so much water. So we were set. I mean, we were using that water for toilets, mostly a little bit for cooking because it was pretty clean. Or not for cooking, for washing and stuff. We had drinking water stockpiled because I'd bought bottled water on sale. It was on Sobeys. It was like dirt cheap for a flat, and so I'd bought a whole whack of it. So we were using that.
Yeah, my buddy Mark does that too. I was in his basement the other day, and it looked like a Big 8 water factory down there.
Yeah.
Or Aquafina. I'm not sure which one. It's crazy. Coming back again, to the... Go ahead. No, sorry.
I was going to say, again, being on a well, the water's there. You just have to extract it. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of ways you can do that without expensive hand pumps or things that use electricity.
Mm.
So as simple as a length of polyethylene pipe with a foot valve on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And you just pump it up and down like a hand pump, and the water will come out. I had all that stuff rigging because I'm a plumber, so I had all that stuff there. We didn't have to use it. So
Coming back to the diesel, I think what I would do if I had the barn type setup that you have is I would get my hands on an old oil tank for an oil furnace.
Yes.
And I would set that up, and I would keep that filled with diesel on a pump.
That's what I just said.
Oh, you had said that?
Yeah, I guess I did.
I knew I heard that somewhere.
A wise man once said. No, yeah.
Man.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what you would want to do. Yeah. Yeah, and if you do burn oil, I mean, there's still lots of people around that burn oil in the wintertime. Keep that in mind. That diesel is the same as, fuel diesel is the same
it's
as
diesel.
That diesel, really.
That's right. Diesel's diesel.
So.
Yeah, what you burn in your furnace, you can burn in your truck.
Yep.
They put a dye in one of them or something.
Yeah, the downside is having diesel, you're not going to be is prone to storing gasoline. And the nice thing about storing gasoline is now I can use that in my vehicles if I want. So if I need to go somewhere and gas stations are open, so you're still kind of storing two fuels.
Yeah.
For me, the diesel gets the win simply because of its long-term storage capabilities over gas.
Awesome.
So
cool. But, well, that's awesome, man. I hope that people can learn from what you went through. So how's about some listener feedback there, Owen? This first one comes from, hey, look, it's Jason Philp again. Jason says, I love your show. You guys are awesome, and you know everything about skeet. Actually, what he said was, I just listened to your podcast review of trap shooting. It was effing painful. Feel free to include this comment in your podcast number 65. Thanks again for the support, Jason. Way to promote your sport. A couple of novices want to talk about it, and El Presidente shoots us down and makes us feel stupid. This is why your sport's going to fail. No, I'm sure that if Jason Philp went out and did like an IPSC style mini match, and then went on a podcast and spoke about it, we would probably be like gritting our teeth listening to it. So
I have no doubt.
Yeah, there's probably a little bit of truth to what he's saying. But anyway, and I'm over it. And I'm not going to buy a new gun. I'm just going to use my Versamax. So, but actually, I think next time I'm actually going to put an eye patch over my left eye and see if I can do it with one eye.
Why can't you just close one eye?
Not an eye patch.
Just like kind of a fuzzy, like a little bit translucent kind of material, like a little bit of scotch tape or something.
Go to the pharmacy and get a pair of those. You know what your grandfather used to put over his glasses there? That bad clip on with the sunglasses that flip down over top. Those, and just use one half or something.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
Or you could just close one eye.
Or I could just close one eye. I think that's what I'll do. It's so frustrating because I can shoot my pistols with both eyes open. I can shoot my AR and with the EOTech or the Lupo with both eyes open because of the way the optics are far forward that I can use my right eye and it works. but shooting shotgun when you're left eye dominant, you're looking at the side of your barrel is not, it's not productive.
Yeah.
So anyway, how about you grab the next one from Jason Gallen?
All right. He says, "Hey guys, first off, sorry for the delay in sending this email. It's been a busy couple of weeks for me. I had a few activities and events to attend and bought a new M&P 40 and a Norinco CQA. I'm just writing to say thank you to all three of you for putting on the charity shoot and to thank Steve for coming all this way to give up some of his time. You guys are inspirational to the shooting community with your professionalism." And, sorry, that just makes me laugh.
Yeah.
"And generosity in representing the shooting sports. Our community can..."
Sorry, yeah. Let me stop you. Generosity? If anybody's generous, it's Jason Gallen.
Yeah.
He shows up with 12 pounds of sausage to feed everybody.
Yeah.
He brought me 2 buckets of brass and 1 bucket. I was getting tired at this point. He said, "And this bucket's primed." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, great, thanks." No, yeah, really. Yeah, he brought me a bucket of primed 9mm brass. There's got to be at least 1,000 pieces in there. It's primed, it's ready for powder. So, and he left this jar, it's a mason jar, of a clear liquid in my refrigerator. And when I open it and smell it, it kind of smells like turpentine. And it's flammable, and it tastes really good.
We'll leave it at that.
Yeah. So he's generous.
Yes, he is a generous guy. Anyway, he goes on to say, okay, I'm going to back up a little bit. "With your professionalism and generosity in representing the shooting sports, our community can only benefit from people like you four." I'm assuming he's including Steve there.
Yeah.
I was like, wait a minute. Who's the fourth one? And why is he on the show?
He's the fourth Beatle.
He goes on to say, "Thank you for putting on this event, and I hope there's many, many more. Secondly, I have to thank Trevor and his wife for their hospitality. If it wasn't for you two, a lot of us out-of-towners may not have been able to attend."
And I got to tell another funny story. Saturday night, we're sitting around the campfire, and the wobbly pops are flowing, and so is that clear liquid stuff. And he says to me, he says, "Trevor, you're getting up early tomorrow morning to go do the trap. I need a wake-up call. I need you to get me out of bed. And I am going to swear at you. I'm going to tell you to go away. I'm going to refuse to get out of bed. I'm not going to get up. I might even throw something at you. But I need you to get me up." All right, challenge accepted.
He had to work the next day, right?
That's right.
Something like that, yeah.
Challenge accepted. So I wake up and I'm pissed because I don't want to be awake. I don't want to go to trap. I want to sleep because I was up till like 3 o'clock. So I open his door. "Jason, get up." Nothing. Grab the sleeping bag and I pull the sleeping bag and almost him off of the bed. "Get up." He got up. He said to me later, he said, "I'll be honest, dude, you scared me a little bit." So it worked.
Yeah. And finally, thanks to everyone attending, seen some old friends and made lots of new ones. I can tell he's a Maritimer.
Yep.
He's seen some old friends.
Yeah.
Lots of new ones. Looking forward to seeing you all again at the Pistol Clinic next month.
Sweet. Can't wait. So, Jason, you have a spot. I'm not sure where it'll be, but of course, you know you're welcome to stay here anytime, brother. Dirt McGirt. So this Dirt McGirt guy, he used to just be a thorn in my side on CGN. He's a reason why I don't go to CGN. No, he's not. But anyway, he's infiltrated our show. He's almost like a Jason Philp. He sends these silly emails that nobody likes. Anyway.
Are you going to read this the way it's written?
Sup, dog? Y'all need to tell Steve Lee to record that. In the studio, man. That was hilarious. My homeboys and I don't take McCrotchy. My homeboys and I don't take McCrotchy shots, but that was too funny not to be recorded professionally. Dirt McGirt, yo. I definitely think if he records another album that he should definitely get it on there.
Yep.
Best iTunes review of the week, Owen? That's right, there is none.
There is none. Not that there was not a best one, there just wasn't one.
There are several. The most recent one, I believe, was dated June 10th. So, guys, it's been a month. Hello. Mm-hmm. I think we're worthy of another one.
Maybe we're not anymore.
Maybe. Probably. And but yeah, no, actually, checking us out on iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review helps get the show noticed and helps get us out to new listeners so that we can, you know, basically annoy and torture other people. So please do your part to help spread this tomfoolery and shenanigans throughout the interwebs. You got a shout out there, Owen?
Yeah, I got a shout out to Stephen Page. He knows why. So that's enough.
All right. Stephen Page, you the man, says Owen. Okay. Be sure to join both. I'm changing it. Be sure to join both of our National Firearms Associations. They are the NFA and the CSSA. They're like I've said it before, I'll say it again. The only reason for their being is to help you. So since they're working for you, help them by throwing some cash their way so that they can be more effective. They need two things to be effective on your behalf. They need money and they need numbers. They're not going to carry any weight in Ottawa if they don't have the numbers to show to Parliament that they represent us. They're not going to go up there and be listened to if they only have 3,000 members. If you own a gun or if you own 100 guns, you need to join both of these associations because all of the changes that you've seen in the last 5 years are because these guys, and it probably before that, but I'm only using that number because I'm relatively new to it, but everything good that's happening, all the changes that we're getting, it's not the Liberals that are pushing for this. It's not even the Conservatives that are pushing for this. These are the guys that push to get the change. These are the guys that are getting you more rights, privileges, and freedoms with your firearms. So if you're not a member, you're borderline FUD. You need to get on board, guys. You need to become part of the fight. Another way you can be part of the fight is to stay active in the community online, stay informed, and that would take place on the Gun Owners of Canada website. Get over there, check them out, sign up today. They have really cool forums with all kinds of different areas of interest, even MILSERP. Seriously. I know, right? And like us on Facebook, we're up to, well, as of last week's show, as of June 12th, we're up to 1,012 likes and counting. So I guess it's, I don't know, it's an ego thing, Owen? Why do we care if people like us on Facebook?
I really don't know either why we would.
Maybe it gets it gets the page traffic, and if it gets the page traffic, it gets the show traffic?
We're up to 1,019.
Oh, giddy up.
I just checked.
All right. That was quick, man. That was only like a couple of seconds ago.
Oh, awesome. I'm like Mr. Google. I'm just
I'm saying the listeners were quick. Like by the time
I see.
We went from 12 to 19 with one please go like us. That's good. And then, of course, finally, the networks. Be sure to check out all the other great shows on both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Tons of great material on each of those networks and other Canadian shows on the Crusader Podcast. Are there other Canadian shows?
I believe there was. I don't know if there still is or not.
Well, the Quebec guys need to come back.
Right. Brian's show, yeah, his is gone.
His is gone. Your other show seems to be what? What's going on?
No.
And Action Shooting Radio is supposed to be there, but no. Nope. It's not that I don't want to be there. And Joe said I was welcome to be on the network, but I just haven't sent him whatever I need to send him, which I'm sure would take 30 seconds. But people keep wanting
to
change.
Like you have anything else to do. I mean,
if people would stop asking to change squads and can I camp at the range, I'd be good, you know? Ain't nobody got time for that. All right, so what do we do now? Is it shoot straight, shoot safe, shoot often, stay classy? Which one are we doing this week?
I have no idea. How about we just say goodbye?
Goodbye.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.